Today's topic is human rights. Here's Lise Doucette.
The world is all too full of injustice. People's rights are not being respected. And these violations are getting more and more coverage in the media. Our rights are being denied despite international laws meant to protect us. Laws, conventions, charters on human rights have existed for centuries, but the abuses still exist. In today's Insight Plus, we'll look at the language used to report on human rights and gain some insight into how the rights of people around the world are not being respected. First, let's listen to part of a report by Richard Hamilton, featured in the BBC World Service radio programme Analysis. He focuses on the European Convention on Human Rights. But the language in that agreement, that convention, is universal, like the issue of human rights. We start just after the Second World War. In 1945, Europe was in a mess. Many European cities were destroyed by the bombings. People had suffered greatly. And there were troubling questions about the cruelty, the atrocities that occurred during the war. The worst abuse of human rights was what came to be known as the Holocaust, the genocide of Jews in Nazi Germany. So much had been destroyed, but from the ruins, or out of the ashes of post-war Europe, came a new determination.
After the Second World War, Europe lay in ruins, devastated by bombs, killings and atrocities. But out of the ashes emerged a convention that lawmakers promised meant citizens would never again suffer persecution, torture, slavery or discrimination.
Immediately after the war, 46 governments came together under the title of the United Nations. The UN declared that the horrors of the Second World War should never be allowed to happen again. Respect for human rights and human dignity is, it said, the foundation of freedom, justice and peace in the world. In 1948, the UN created the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and shortly afterwards came the European Convention. The spirit and principles in both these documents can be found in similar works throughout history. As long ago as 1215 in England's Magna Carta, in the Declaration of Independence in the United States of America in 1776, and in the 1789 French Declaration of the Rights of Man and Citizen. Let's return now to our report on the European Convention of Human Rights. We'll hear from Keir Starmer, a leading human rights lawyer, on the significance of this convention.
It's meant common values across Europe and a common strategy to uphold human rights and to make them central in the protection given to individuals from their governments.
Human rights are based on the idea that we have common values, shared ideals such as all human beings are born free and equal, and everyone has the right to life and liberty. These common values are stated clearly in the European Convention. Here's Keir Starmer again, describing the protection the convention has given to citizens.
Individuals throughout Europe have relied on the right to liberty to challenge arrest and detention on a widespread basis. They've relied on the convention to challenge discrimination throughout Europe. And they've widely relied on freedom of expression to put forward views of minorities as well as majorities.
Keir Starmer mentions some rights that are enshrined or permanently protected in the European Convention. They include the right to challenge arrest and detention, so we are not punished for things we haven't done. There's also our right to freedom of expression, our right to say what we think and feel, whether it's about religion, politics, or personal matters. That can be especially important when we are part of a minority, when our views are different from the views of the majority of people. In our next clip, we'll hear some key articles or points from the 1948 Universal Declaration of Human Rights. They're read by Eleanor Roosevelt, the wife of the former American President Theodore Roosevelt. She chaired the group that spent 3 years creating this historic declaration.
Article 3. Everyone has the right to life, liberty and security of person. Article 4. No one shall be held in slavery or servitude. Slavery and the slave trade shall be prohibited in all their forms.
Over the years, a large number of laws and charters have been developed based on the UN's Universal Declaration of Human Rights. They're meant to protect citizens, and to confront human rights violations wherever they occur. Around the world, countries and regions have written their own conventions. We've heard about the European Convention of Human Rights. There's also an American convention and an African charter. But the report asks whether a global agreement could work. Some countries argue that certain cultures, for example Islamic nations, may need their own human rights charter. But most experts agree that human rights are universal and should be applied around the world. To help achieve that, there have even been attempts to establish an international guide, such as the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, signed in 1966. It's a great goal. But the report reminds us that this lofty or grand idealistic talk about people's rights isn't much help to people living in the poorest nations. If you're hungry or you don't have a roof over your head, it's not much comfort to know you have a basic right to food and shelter.
Lofty discussions about civil liberties might seem a long way off for people in many parts of the world where their first concern is to get enough food to survive. The human rights lawyer Keir Starmer says in these cases, conventions give more priority to economic rights rather than political ones.
These are of primary importance to developing nations who rightly see that civil and political rights, for example, the right to vote, the right to education, can only be achieved if there's a degree of economic prosperity and that ordinary people are educated and have access to their civil and political rights. So that's why there's a different emphasis. In truth, both sets of rights are indivisible. You can't have one without the other. There are not many countries that say we need to be fed and therefore we don't care about freedom of expression, for example. There's many countries that say, in addition to freedom of expression, we need to be fed, and until we are fed, we can't have true freedom of expression. And that's a very valid position for them to take.
As new conventions are prepared, there's a growing understanding that economic and social conditions must be emphasised if basic human rights are to be respected worldwide. When we speak about human rights, we also look at human wrongs, the abuse of these rights. We often learn about these abuses through organisations which monitor the behaviour of governments and other authorities. There are many national and international human rights organisations. One of the most well-known is Amnesty International. Let's listen now to a report on human rights abuses by the BBC's diplomatic correspondent Barnaby Mason. It looks at the violent conflict in the Middle East and at criticism by Amnesty International of the behaviour of both sides, Israelis and Palestinians. This short extract contains the kind of language you often hear in broadcasts about human rights violations. You'll hear the expressions breaking rules, grave breach, and gross violations. They mean the same thing, that rights have been abused and conventions ignored. And words such as gross and grave tell us the violations are very serious indeed.
Amnesty International criticises both sides, but the weight of its condemnation bears more heavily on Israel. It says the Israeli forces are breaking their own rules as well as international standards laid down in the Geneva Conventions, that lethal force must only be used to counter an immediate threat to life. Mr. Cordoni said Amnesty International condemned what appeared to be random Palestinian firing at Jewish settlements, as well as punitive Israeli raids mounted after the event to teach a lesson. Asked whether war crimes was the phrase to describe Israeli actions over the past month, Mr. Cordoni said there was a pattern of gross human rights violations that might well amount to war crimes. The Geneva Conventions prohibited willful killings, he said. That would be a grave breach and therefore a war crime, though Amnesty couldn't say that any individual case fell into this category. That was a matter for a tribunal to investigate.
The report says the Geneva Convention has been ignored. Like other human rights conventions, it outlines how people should be treated. But the Geneva Convention applies to the specific circumstances of war. It protects the rights of soldiers captured by the enemy and also the rights of the sick and wounded. It's there to remind warring groups that even in the middle of a conflict, individuals must be treated fairly and humanely. You also heard the term tribunal. It's a committee or group of people with legal powers to establish whether serious abuses were committed during wartime. For example, the International War Crimes Tribunal investigates accusations such as genocide or mass murder during the Balkans conflict. Indicted individuals charged with such war crimes are put on trial. There's also a similar tribunal for Rwanda, based in East Africa. These tribunals emphasize that individuals responsible for the gravest crimes must be punished. Only then can the UN Declaration on Human Rights achieve its goal, that atrocities must not be allowed to happen again. Today on Insight Plus, we've heard about the importance of respecting the basic human rights of every individual. We also heard how many international and national conventions on human rights have been established to try to safeguard our rights and prevent their abuse, even in times of war. But we've also been reminded that talk of basic human rights, such as the right to food and shelter, provides little comfort to the poorest, who are hungry and homeless. To achieve universal respect for human rights, there must also be attention to the different conditions in which people live.